good morning once again, and we're delighted that you're with us this morning as we continue on with our series on No Place Like Home. Now, of all the places on this planet, and there are many, there is simply no place like home. Whether you live in an apartment, a condominium, a small house, or a sprawling estate, your little place, whatever you call that dwelling, that is a place of refuge, your own place in this world. Now, my prayer for each and every one of you this morning is the fact that when you go home, you'll find your home to be a little place of heaven on this earth, regardless of what is going on in the world, regardless of what is going on next door, that your home will be an island of love, peace, and of joy. Now, to that end, each week we're discussing how each and every room of the house represents a different facet of life. Last week, we spent some time together hanging out in the backyard. While there, we discovered that the front yard is often for show. It's for curb appeal, whereas authentic family life most often takes place in the backyard. Yes, it's in the backyard where we do the grilling, the chilling. It's where we have our picnics and games. You know, generally, real life takes place in the backyard. You know, it has been said that the family that prays together stays together. And that's a wonderful truth. Yes, the family that prays together stays together. However, it has also been said the family that prays together and plays together makes it fun to stay together. You see, I believe there are far too many families that just endure family life when God wants us to enjoy family life. And every single member of every single family is vital. And so to that end, this day we're going to be spending a little bit of time in a very special room, that room being the family room. You know, the family room goes by various names. It could be called the family den, or if you have small children, it might even be called the playroom. Our home, the one that we raised our children in, and still live into this very day, was built in 1967. It's 50 years old this year. And during that time period, homes that were being built, it was very common to have both a formal living room as well as a family room. Today, the two rooms have kind of become merged together into one, which often is referred to as the great room. Now, in our case, the formal living room was seldom, if ever, used. How many can relate to that? You've got a room, it's been set aside, and called it the formal, you know, living room. It was seldom, if ever, used. It was kind of like it was always on standby. In the event that someone should drop in unannounced, there was a room in the house that was clean, and it was a place where they could come and sit down and know that it was always there, it was always ready. However, like the front yard, most formal living rooms are merely showcases. I remember being raised, being told, don't sit on the furniture. That's a nice welcome, isn't it? Don't sit on the furniture. Don't play in that room. Remember when furniture all came with heavy plastic on it? And you kept the plastic on as long as you could. Especially having 11 children, realizing as soon as it comes off, it's going to get worn quickly. You know, in fact, most living room furniture actually becomes outdated before it wears out because it is so seldom, if ever, used. Now, the family room, on the other hand, is where real living takes place. You know, the furniture often in a family room is threadbare and worn. And it's because we use it. It's the room where we literally live. Every stain on the floor has a story behind it. You can look at that stain and, oh yeah, that's when the cup tipped over with Kool-Aid. And this one over here is where the kids tipped over the coffee. And we always blame it on the kids, you know, until they get old enough to defend themselves. And it doesn't take long and they begin to say, oh no, that was you, not me. Real life takes place in the family room. You know, everything in this room is about family. from the pictures on the walls to the games that are stacked in the corner. You know, it's a place where we do family life and where we relax and do life together. I saw a wonderful family room sign the other day. The sign said this, "Please excuse our mess. We live in this room." And I like that. Excuse our mess. We really do life in this room. We live in this room. It's not for show. This is where this family truly lives out life. And when you think about it for a few moments, the family room is really probably the only other place where every single member of the family connects with each other on a daily basis. Possibly the other room might be the kitchen. We all seem to bump into each other near the refrigerator. But you know, other than the kitchen, probably this room called the family room is probably the most important gathering spot for every single family. I believe that every family needs a gathering spot. You see, we live in a day where everybody in the morning gets up and they go in separate directions. The children often go off to daycare or to school. If you have older children in the home, they may go off to a college or university or to high school or, you know, their responsibilities for the day. Others go off to their jobs, daily responsibilities of all kinds. And at the end of that day, this gathering spot called the family room is a place where we come together. You see, the family room is a place where we can play together. It's a place where we pray together. It's a place where we have conversations about what happened during the day. It's a place where we talk together. It's a place where we laugh together. It's a place where we cry together. It's a place where, in today's terminology, we do life together. Friends, I want you to know this place, this family room, and our family gathering spot, that is a place where inclusion, everyone must be included. Everyone must be valued. Each and every one must be considered important. It's a place where love must be the language that is spoken. This room, above all rooms, must be the room where there is encouragement. Times when things are tough and people have been misunderstood. In this room, love is spoken. In this room, forgiveness is offered. In this room, what happens here is going to trump whatever's happened any other place throughout the day. A couple of years ago, I was traveling in Canada, and we came to the beautiful city, some of you have been there, Victoria, British Columbia. It's a beautiful Canadian city. It's a city of parks. The time we were there, it was so beautiful. The parks were in full bloom and the flowers and, you know, the walkways. And just as you made yourself throughout the city, whether it's the downtown, the buildings outlined in lights, it's a gorgeous city. And the waterways, and it's just, it's a place to visit. However, the thing that captured my attention as we were doing this bus tour on this Friday evening was every single home we passed by and every apartment, we could see families gathered on the inside of their homes and apartments, gathered around the table or gathered around in their family room. And they were spending Friday night as a family together. As I was traveling in Norway for the very first time, many years ago now, I was amazed at how family was the central, it was the hub of everything that was going on in Norway. In Oslo, as we would come down the streets, we would find entire families, little ones in tow, and if they were too small, they were in baby buggies, and I mean, it was a sight to behold, families together. If you went to the parks were filled with families. And again, as you would see them through the windows of their homes, not that I was peeking through the windows, but it was very evident that they were having family time and enjoying family and doing it together. Now, here's what I discovered. Both in Victoria, British Columbia, as well as in Norway and in many other places, I've discovered The value that one places upon the culture is based upon how they value the family. And the family in each and every one of these cases, watching families together is a very appealing thing. It's very attractive to see a family enjoying life together. You know, over the years, I've gone over to tables and restaurants and I've said to them, you know, you have been a blessing to me tonight just to watch you interact with your family. And we have had that in our occasion as well, as individuals have come to our table and they've said it's been fun just to watch you interact and enjoy each other as a family. That is a very appealing thing to a world that's all falling apart. It's an appealing thing to see a family that's enjoying one another. I believe this is what David had in his mind when he penned Psalm 133. I believe he is thinking about family, and I'm going to prove that out to you as we unpack the truths that are found in Psalm 133 in verse 1. It says, "Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity." One more time. "Behold," he says, I want you to look, I want you to see how good and pleasant it is for brethren or families to dwell together in unity. You know, the Bible tells us that Satan's overall game plan is to rob, to kill, and destroy. If you look at the life of Job in the Old Testament, when Satan came on the scene, he came to rob, kill, and destroy. First, he lost his wealth. Then he lost his family, then he lost his health. Anything and everything that the enemy touches is all about rob, kill, and destroy. And friend, you need to understand that is his modus operandi, and that is his intentions for your family as well. He wants to separate one family member from the other. He wants us to be at odds with one another. He wants the family so that no longer are we a knit together, tight family unit, but rather we're segmented and we're kind of all over the place. And to do that, he's going to use a poor choice of words. You know, I've seen families over a poor choice of words that were used. They've not spoken to one another for decades. Or an unkind word. Or jealousy begins to crop up within the family. Or envy or strife, unforgiveness and bitterness. And suddenly we find ourselves, rather than living as a family, we're segmented. And there's some members of the family, if they're going to be there, then I'm not going to be present. And the family, rather than being knit together, is torn apart. And remember what Satan does. He robs, he kills, and he destroys. And that is exactly what he wants to do with your family. And suddenly we find after these circumstances of unkind word and jealousy and envy and strife and all of this, someone is now missing in the family room. The chair where they once sat, the game they once played, they're no longer there. And now the family is separated and going off in different directions. Not only does he want to cause damage within the immediate family, he wants the collateral damage of others turning on others as well as they take sides. And as they begin to take sides of one brother, one sister, or with mom or with dad or with someone else, and pretty soon you've got everybody pointing fingers at each other. And the family room, which was once a place of gathering, is now an empty room. A place where no one wants to be. Psalm 133 is a psalm by David. It is called a song of ascent. This particular verse, verse 1 through verse 3, there of Psalm 133, became one of the key songs that were sung as pilgrims would make their journey up to Jerusalem to celebrate Passover. So as families would make their way together on their way up to Jerusalem for Passover, every member of the family joined together, and they would go together as a caravan of people. They would make their way up to Jerusalem. And as they would do so, they would sing songs. And as they would sing these songs, they would sing them, and that is why they're called Songs of Ascent, because Jerusalem, because of its elevation, is always spoken of in the Bible as going up to Jerusalem. So as they would go up to Jerusalem for Passover and for these high holy days, they would sing songs to make the time go by as they would make their way towards Jerusalem. When our kids were little and we were making our way out to South Dakota to visit the grandparents, our kids would start singing about the time we got to Browns Valley, Minnesota, which was only about 14 miles away from Grandma and Grandpa's house, both on Sherry's side and my side. They began to sing the song in the back seat. We're on our way to Grandpa's house, to Grandpa's house, to Grandpa's house. We're on our way to Grandpa's house. How much fun that will be. Didn't always rhyme, but it was their song. And this was the way we would take and go down the highway. And so as they would make their way towards Jerusalem, families traveling together, as they made that journey, they would sing these songs of ascent. Look at it one more time. Behold how good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Now let's unpack these truths. Many scholars believe the inspiration for this song written by David, this song of ascent, came from David's personal observation of a family on his way to Jerusalem. And he begins this song by saying, behold. You know, we used to say the word behold, you know, back in Old English, but that's been a long, long, long time ago. In modern vernacular, it would be more like look. And so David, as he is making his way to Jerusalem with his family in tow, as they're making this journey, he says, behold, I want you to look, I want you to look, I want you to see. And what is he pointing out and what is he saying? He says, behold, and the word means don't miss this sight seldom seen. He said, what I'm pointing out to you, what I'm showing you, what we're observing here in this family that is enjoying life together in this village on our way as we pass by, as I was driving through the streets or riding through the streets of Victoria or in Oslo, you know, Norway, the sight, behold, look and see. Here is something you're not going to see every day is what David is saying. And he says, behold, don't miss out on this sight that is seldom seen. He goes on, behold, how good and how pleasant. The word there, good and pleasant, if you were to read them in the original language, it would say how attractive and savory. How attractive and savory it is to see a family enjoying life together. Friend, I want you to know it's an attractive thing to see a family that loves each other, cares for each other, and is investing in one another and lifting one another up when difficulties come. And though the world may be against, they will always be for each other. That's an attractive thing. And he says, I want you to look. I want you to stop. I want you to behold. This is a sight that is seldom seen to see a family. And to see a family like this, this is attractive and it's actually savory. Now, we don't use those terms much today, but it really means this. This type of a sight, seeing a family together, is not only attractive, but it's like a great steak. It's savory. It tastes good to see something like this. How good and pleasant. These two words were Hebrew terms to describe a beautiful landscape or the sound of a symphony of great music. Now, I want you to notice carefully why and how it is that David is so excited. He says, behold, how good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Now the word brethren, just what does that term mean? The word brethren is used here as a reference to the Jewish family structure. Get this in your heart this morning. Brethren are members of the same ancestral family. So what David is saying, he says, look, behold, there is a sight that is seldom seen. Here is a family that is enjoying life together. and its brethren, its family. It is members of the same ancestral family together enjoying life. So brethren, family members dwelling together, the Bible says, in unity caught the eye and the heart and the attention of David. And David said, this is savory. This is something that is enjoyable to see. How good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together, family members to dwell together in unity. That term to dwell together means to live, to residence together, assembled together in one place. Now, most of us have a room in our home, whether we call it the den or the family room or by some other nomenclature. We have a place where we gather. And many times in that space, there is a television. That television has become the center of most family activity. That is after the fight of what show they're going to watch. And some will stomp off and go to their bedroom because a lot of kids today have, you know, some means of watching something either on their tablet or their iPhone or, you know, television in the room somewhere along the way. They tell us that the average person today watches television 5 hours and 4 minutes per day. 5 hours and 4 minutes per day. You say, well, that's not me. I don't think you've been keeping very good track. I think if you were to begin to take track, you would begin to understand just how much time is consumed by television. And so we say, we're going to have a family night. And in the family night, everybody's like this. And they're watching a screen, and there's very little to any communication going on. Or if there is, it's through texting. This silent little thing that goes on between. Matter of fact, they say in addition to the 5 hours and 4 minutes daily, we spend approximately 2 hours every single day on some form of electronic communication, whether it's, you know, searching, you know, just going through the internet, whether it's email or, you know, FaceTiming or something. We spend then, out of every single day, hours and hours and hours. You say, well, not me. Keep track of your time. If you come home and you start at 4:30, watching the early news or the 5 o'clock news or the 6 o'clock news, and begin to just kind of fall into that while you're going to eat now in the same room and we're going to continue to watch television, you can have hours and hours pass by. Now, here's the thing I'm trying to get across to you. We're not talking about just being in the same room. My wife snuck into the family room one day and took a picture. And the picture told me a story I didn't want repeated again. I tried to find it this morning. Thank God it's been deleted or something. I don't know. But she came in and she snapped a picture off in the corner. I had my laptop and I was working on it. Stephanie happened to be at the house, and she had her laptop out, and she was working on it. And Josh was at the house, and he was on the laptop. And all of us were sitting there, and there was no communication at all going on. We were in the same room at the same time, and nobody was doing anything in a united way other than on the internet. It's pretty easy, friends, to think that we're having family time when we're just in the same space, and that's not really what the Bible is talking about at all. Matter of fact, the word that is used there, how good and pleasant it is for brethren, that is members of the same family, to live, to residence together, assembled together in one place with unity. And the word unity there literally means harmony. Unity is the sound of a perfectly tuned stringed instrument. I cut my teeth in ministry under Joseph Wanamaker. Joseph Wanamaker was a concert violinist, and he was excellent at his trade. And the violin, those of you that know strings, you know there's the A, the D, the G, and the E chords, and these strings, and they're tuned. Each one is unique and different, yet when they are played together, They make a wonderful harmonizing sound. So what is the Bible trying to tell us here? What is David saying? If I were to put this into a Jerry Brooks version translation for you, here's the way it would read, and I'll put it on the screen. Look, here's a sight seldom seen. A family in the same place at the same time, living together in harmony with one another. That is what David is saying. David is saying, there is a sight I don't want you to miss, because this is unique. I want you to look. There's a sight seldom seen, a family in the same place at the same time, living together in harmony with one another. A family like this would have been quite an amazing thing to David, because if you know the story of David, David's family was in total disarray. David's house was filled with turmoil, with strife, and with division. David's father and older brothers had an extremely low opinion of him. His wife, Michal, had despised him because of his dedication to God and made fun of him for serving God. His immediate family, his sons and daughters, they were further rocked with rape, with murder, with conspiracy, with insurrection. It's no wonder the sight of a family enjoying life together caught David's attention. David stopped, literally stopped on the way to Jerusalem. And I can see him writing his notes. This has got to be a song, because songs were ways and the means of teaching great lessons in that day. And so as they sang their way up to Jerusalem, it was a learning process all the way up. And he looks in the window of this home as he's passing by, and he sees the family. He says, behold, look, here's a sight you don't see every day. It's a family in the same place at the same time, enjoying life together. But poor David, his house is filled with turmoil, strife, and division. It's no wonder this sight then of a family enjoying life together caught David's attention. In Psalm 133 and verse 1, he writes and says, behold, look, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together, families to dwell together in unity. Since the birth of our grandchildren, our formal living room has been turned into a playroom. There's only one chair left in the room. There was two couches in there and a lot of other things, you know, coffee tables and end tables and lamps and all of this. All of that's been removed. There's only one chair that remains in that room, and that's my prayer chair. Now, on nearly every single family occasion where the family gathers at our house, we go over to what was once the formal living room, which has now become the playroom, and we get on the floor, because I'm not going to miss this moment. There's no bit of furniture, there's no amount of decorum that's going to stop this grandpa from enjoying this moment, which I know is a moment in their life. But out of this moment, my prayer is that we can help shape and form, along with godly parents, shape and form their precious lives forever. And so on the floor, we romp and play and throw balls. You say, throw a ball in the house? Yeah. If it's too cold outside, we're going to throw a ball on the inside. I haven't broken anything much yet. Here's the deal. Parents, grandparents, let me encourage you. Make the family room a priority. Call it what you will, hold it where you want, but make the family room a priority. You see, the family that prays together stays together. Sometimes in that family room, we cry and we pray. Sometimes in the family room, we've had tough conversations. Other times it's just romping. You know, sometimes they even call the family room the romping room. You know why? Because it's a place where we just downright have good fun one with another. You need a place to connect at the end of every day, a place that you connect as a family. And that's that very special place that we call the family room. Now, I'll tell you what happens at my house. When I come home at the end of a day, first thing I do is I take my jacket off and I throw it. Yeah, that neat. I throw it. I'm home. This room is not for show. This room is for real life, real living, the real stuff. The other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to always take my shoes off. Now, this morning I checked to make sure my big toe wasn't sticking through. I'm going to loosen my tie. I'm home. Yep. I'm home. There is no place like home. No place like home. But some of you, boy, the enemy has hit hard. And what used to be such a fun place, it's become a heartache. People are missing. The camaraderie that you once felt as a family has been hit hard. And like David, you look at other families. At times you become jealous and even envious. You say, God, how could this have happened to my family? And like David, you look at these other families, you say, look. Take a look at an unusual sight. A family that really loves being together, enjoys being together, and no one's missing. They're all present. Behold, how good, how pleasant it is when the brethren dwell together in unity. When the family is not only in the same spot, but they love each other, forgive each other, and they do family together. No place like the family room. No place like having the kids around. There's nothing like it. Possibly you're here today and you're saying, you know, boy, our family's gone through it. And I'm not accepting what the enemy has done. Like the people of Ziklag, the Bible says when the men were out of town, out on a military battle with David, when they came back, the city had been ransacked. Wives and children had been taken. Their homes were burned to the ground. You say, well, I don't know what's happened, but let me tell you, my family's kind of fallen apart. I want to pray for you today because I believe that God is a God of restoration. I believe that He wants to see your family restored. He wants to see the one that's become wayward and so distant, wants to see them brought back in again. See, out of all the places in the world, there is no place like home.